We're starting a new series called True Stories, Eyewitness Accounts, people that actually saw Jesus do a miracle. And today we're talking about one that's kind of famous, when he turned water into wine. And so grab your note sheet, if you would. Welcome to East Lake again. Good to have you here. And Jesus, when he would do these different miracles, sometimes people would recount them and tell others about them. But there was one person, his name was John, who was an eyewitness from the very beginning. And he wrote a lot of the different stories down into a small little biography of Jesus. And that got circulated around. It's in the Bible now. But initially, it was just some stuff that he wrote down. He was basically saying, hey, I was there. What we do with a phone now, when someone says, I was there, you say, well, I got to see the picture. You know, you show them, okay, I was actually there. That was sort of what he was doing. He was saying, hey, I was there when these things happened. And he wrote them down into a biography. And he said at the very end of the book why he did it. So if you look at your note sheet, I'll read it to you. Jesus did many other powerful works in front of his followers. They are not all written in this book. Talking about what he had written down and his recounting, his eyewitness accounts. But these are written so you may believe that Jesus is Christ, the Son of God. When you put your trust in him, you'll have life that lasts forever in his name. Kind of a fancy way of saying he'll always be with you and he'll help you live your life. And he writes all these different stories down. And we thought a good way to prepare for Easter would to take a look at them. Easter is in 3 weeks. The best time to invite someone to church is Easter. And it's probably the most significant and central miracle of the whole story of Jesus. For everybody that follows, if the resurrection didn't happen, then it's just a great philosophy, and it is a good philosophy. It's a lot of good teachings. It's a good thing to guide yourself with morally. But what makes it different is this miracle, and it's all about Easter, the resurrection. So it's in 3 weeks, and if you want to invite somebody, we're going to talk about that. But other miracles leading up to it, true stories today, when Jesus turned water into wine, and it proves one of the greatest truths about people that follow Jesus. And it's the big idea this weekend. Write it in your notes. Jesus invites us to help him do miracles. So he isn't just doing them out there and wowing people like some kind of magic show. People actually participate in the miracles. And this story is a great picture of how that happens. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read you the whole story, then we'll break it down. So here we go. The next day, there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus lived in Galilee. He had a family, friends, and had a job, and he lived in Galilee. He gets invited to a wedding. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. The wine supply ran out during the festivities, so Jesus' mother told him they have no more wine. Dear woman, that's not our problem, Jesus replied. My time has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so. When the master of ceremonies, the MC, tasted the water that was now wine, he did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. And then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you've saved the best until now. Now, we're going to look at the story today from the perspective of what they call servants, think people that do the catering. So they're the waiters and the waitresses taking care of all the food and the drink and everything. And we're going to look at the story from their perspective and what it meant to be invited into this miracle. And the first thing to see, though, is Jesus is invited to the wedding, which would cause us to sort of believe that he was liked by people and that people wanted him there. Jesus gets an invitation, which would seem to say that people liked having him at parties. So I don't know what your picture is of Jesus, you know, if he's a stern Jesus or what he is, but the story represents him as likable. This is his hometown, and people would want to have him around. One of the ways I gauge how I'm following Jesus is if people that aren't walking with God, or they're far from God, or they don't go to church or anything, do they still like having me around? You know, like I don't want my life to be the type of life that when the invitations get passed out, they say, don't give him one. He's a killjoy. He's no fun to be around. Jesus gets an invitation to the wedding. And I know it can be difficult because, like in my life, the pendulum can swing way over to the side where I'm way too easygoing and permissive. I never take a stand for anything. And then, you know, then it goes way over here where I'm like way too strict and I'm always judging everything. And like one of the ways I try to stay grounded is I say, well, you know, Jesus, you were able to honor God and still get an invitation. You're able to honor God and stay clear with God, keep everything in bounds, and people still liked you. They wanted to have you around. It can happen in families or at your job. If you've been lacking an invitation for a while, then maybe check in. You don't want to be over-religious and excluded. And now there's a problem at this wedding because what's happened is they've run out of wine. They don't have enough wine. Which for us, we're thinking, hey, what's the big deal? Just send somebody on a beer run. I mean, this is an easy thing to solve, right? But remember now, this is a long, long time ago. You just didn't run down to 7-Eleven to get more wine. Wine took a long time to make. And they don't have enough. And is there ever a time in your life, I mean, do we ever need a miracle more when we don't have enough? You don't have enough money. Or you don't have enough time. Or you don't have enough energy. Or you don't have enough patience. Maybe you've been struggling and you don't have enough humility. You know you need to apologize to somebody. And you even want to apologize. You want to go say you're sorry, but you don't have enough humility. When's the last time you didn't have enough forgiveness? Somebody did something to you, they wronged you, you hurt them, and you'd like to get over it, but you just can't let it go. Because you don't have enough. It comforts me in this story to know that when the wine runs out in my life, I can go to somebody that can do something about it, and so can you. Whatever this week you found, like, man, I don't have enough, that's the story. Now, this is the first miracle that Jesus ever does, and it may seem odd that he would do a miracle to make sure some people weren't embarrassed. I mean, weddings are big deals now. I mean, the dress has to be perfect, the music's perfect, and everything has to happen. But in this day, it was even more. Families would save for years to throw the wedding bash, and it would go on for days. And they would have these huge parties after the ceremony, and everybody would be invited. And it was kind of a statement of how prepared the family was, how committed they were to the kids. And so these were big, huge things that they would do. And it was going to be embarrassing to run out of wine. It's like, how could you run out of wine, man? You knew this was coming. I mean, you know, this was going to be a social embarrassment. It was going to be a huge thing for this family to run out of wine. You think, well, okay. But I mean, Jesus, if you're going to do your first miracle, I mean, Moses parted the Red Sea. I mean, it's kind of wimpy. You make more wine for some people so they're not embarrassed. But when was the last time you were embarrassed? And I mean the real kind, where like you can feel it all through you and you start to, you know, blush on your face. I mean, when's the last time someone said something to you or something happened or you did something and you were embarrassed? Or maybe you saw someone in your family or your wife or your husband and you saw something and you saw them and they were just embarrassed. Someone embarrassed them. You know, remember how it feels. And Jesus, for some reason, decides to care about something like that. And I know in our culture we say things like, oh, come on, get over it. It's not that big of a deal. Grow some thicker skin. But let's be honest about embarrassment. It can go deep. And it can last a long time. Long time. This was going to be a huge embarrassment for the entire family. This was going to be like a smudge on the family record. So, and he invites these servants, the caterers, to participate in the miracle. They have to answer three questions if they want to do it. It's the same three that we have to answer. So if you're looking for a miracle, take some notes. Number one, write it. Am I willing to be told? His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. Now, this is sort of a family story with family matters. And so, you know how families are? Families are individuals that are in a group, and we call it a family. I don't know if anybody in your family has ever volunteered you to do something. You're like, well, wait a minute, I never said I was going to do that. Oh, yes, you are, because you're in the family. Or your family decides what's going to happen at the holidays or on vacation, and you feel like, I didn't even get a vote, or nobody listened to my vote. I mean, that's how families move. And Jesus initially is reluctant and hesitant. He doesn't want to get a wall. Have you ever said this? Have you ever said this like, hey, that's not my problem? Because somebody else in your family had a problem and they were trying to drag you into it? I mean, that's the story now. Jesus' mom comes and he tells his own mother, and there's this little edge to it. He says, woman. Like, you never know what happened there, but I always imagine Mary being one of those girls like, woman, this woman brought you into this world. Woman, me. But anyways, like, he's like, hey, this is what he says. He says, mom, this is not our family problem. And we go through that in our lives. I mean, you may have someone way down the line in your family, your wife's family, and they're going through all kinds of, you know, crap, and you're looking at it, and they kind of drawing you into it. They need money, or they need this, and you're like, wait a second, I got my own problems in my family. And that's what he says. He's like, mom, this is not our problem. But Mary, her heart's too big. Her heart's breaking. She's got a lot of passion. She's like, I don't want to see him go through this. This is going to last forever. Do you think that your compassion could move God to do something for someone? Or how about, do you think your passion could move God to do something for someone? That's this story. She decides to take a stand for this family. We don't know all the details that happened here, but at some point, something must have occurred. Like, we don't know what Jesus looked like or said, but something must have happened where he must have stopped and said, okay, you're right, mom. I don't want him to be embarrassed either. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that God would put off what he wants to give you what you want? Say it again. Do you see God that way? That he would put off what he wants to give you what you want? Or is he this like glowing kind of huge man in white covered hair, you know, and he's just sitting on a throne and everything has to be perfect and he only agrees with perfect stuff and he never changes and like you got to be super holy to go before him and never look at him and you better say something that totally agrees with him because if you don't, he's not going to do it? Or is he like this story? Because Jesus initially says, and he's God, I don't want to do that. But there's passion. Would God put off what he wants to give you what you want? Well, think about something. He asks us to do that all the time. Doesn't he? I mean, if you follow Jesus, you know there's been some times where he's asked you to sacrifice. I need you to put off what you want so somebody else can have what they want. Well, is it possible that he's the same type of person? Now, why is that important? Because when we pray, when we talk to God, we don't approach him like we're trying to guess at what he would want. So he'll do it. Man, we show up with passion like, hey, this is what I need. And it changes things. Now, it's interesting in this story, it says Mary tells the servants what to do. Now, if you understand, like, that culture, that's like a huge thing for these servants to listen to her and for a woman to tell anybody what to do. Like, this is a long time ago in, you know, Jesus was Jewish, and so this is Israel, and, you know, women did not tell anybody what to do. It was a lot different than today's women. Just playing. No, I'm just saying. I mean, they didn't own small businesses. They didn't run things. They weren't leaders of families. Like, women They didn't have any say-so. Women didn't tell anybody what to do. They didn't give orders. Like, you didn't have to listen to women. I have a friend that's from Malaysia. I'm getting to know him. He came here with a group of Malaysians to America, then Utah. They're immigrants. And as I'm getting to know them, I was talking to him just about a week ago and helped me understand this story. I was talking to all the men, you know, and they were saying, oh, we love America. It's so great and everything. Except for one of the guys said, but the thing I can't get used to is the women talk so much. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, in my country, women aren't allowed to talk. And I was like, that's crazy. He's like, no, you don't understand. Women don't talk. They don't say anything. They're not involved in choice making. They don't make it. The men make all the decisions. And I was like, well, that's why your country sucks. I mean, that's... No, I'm just saying. But I mean, I was just like, are you crazy? He's like, and so one of the guys is there. This is honestly, like, help me understand the story. He's talking about he wanted to buy a $40,000 car, and he's mad because he called his wife to tell her, hey, I'm buying this car. And she said, no, you're not. You have to come home and talk to me. And they're having the hardest time because so now our daughters and our wives, they want to talk. And these men are like, that's not how it's supposed to be. That's this story. That's this story. The story is that's remarkable that they would. Do you know anybody? Just think for a moment. Maybe hopefully it's not you. Do you know anybody that you can't tell them anything? Do you know anybody in your family, your life? Nobody can tell them anything. Like, if you were to rate your scale, like, think about, okay, here's the scale, 1 to 10. Rate yourself on this scale. On the scale of I can be told, rate yourself, 1 to 10. Now, you might be thinking right away, whoa, now, wait a second now. I got to know who's telling me and what it is they're telling me. And I would say to you, no, you don't. Because being able to be told is a character trait. It's not based. If there was anybody that should not have listened, it was these people. But they do. What was different about them? Being able to be told is a character trait. It's not based on circumstances. And to have a miracle happen, one of the things you have to have in your heart is, I can be told. Maybe it was their vocation. Maybe they had just spent years and years and years of waiters and waitresses. If you've ever been in customer service, you know what it is to be told. And they had at some point made the transition, say, you know what? I'm just not going to fight it anymore. It's not that big of a deal. I'm just going to be the kind of person that can be told. Question number one. Here it is for us. If we want to be invited into a miracle, am I willing to be told? Question number two, write in your notes. Am I willing to obey? Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. There are these 30-gallon jars, and he tells them what to do. And I'm going to put myself out here a little bit when it comes to obey. I mean, there's different things about following Jesus, you know, to obey, and then there's things he says to you, you're supposed to obey. And so the question is, are they willing to obey? And he tells them to fill these empty jars with water. They're 30 gallons. And you just read through it, you maybe don't catch it. But think about it. If they were 5-gallon buckets that they have, that's 6 trips. And it said they filled them to the brim. Now, here's what my life looks like sometimes. God says to me, you know, I want you to do this. I'm like, yeah, of course. You know, I'm willing to do it. And then so I get the first 5 gallons and I put it in there. And then I go back and I get the second 5 gallons. And, I'm obeying God. This is awesome. You know, it's good to be a good Christian, you know. And then I go back and I get the third one and I bring it over and I put it in there. And then, you know, I put it in there. And then I get the fourth one. I'm like, whew, it's kind of heavy. It's getting a little heavy here, going over here. Like, Jesus, did you say how much, you know? And then you pour the fourth one in and you go, that's pretty full. I mean, I got it almost. Have you ever almost obeyed? You may think that almost obeying is like parachuting. You're either in the plane or in the air. No, it's not. You can like 70% obey or change your mind in obeying. You know, then you get to the very last one. It says they fill it to the brim, all the way to the top. They obey completely. So I'll put myself out there. 2019, we're doing this thing called Best Year Ever. So I'm on a little vacation visiting my brother, and I took some cigars along. I don't smoke cigarettes. I never have. I just never liked them. It's not a religious thing. But on occasion, I love a good cigar. I probably even love a bad cigar. So anyways, but once in a while. So I took my vacation, right? And so right in the middle of the whole thing, God starts talking to me about 2019, best year ever, my health and everything. He says, I want you to give up cigars. You know, and I'm like, what? I brought these on the vacation. You know, it's like, would you be willing to obey me and give up the cigars? And I'm like, you know, obedience always comes down to this issue. Do I trust that he has my best interest in mind? It's not I don't want to get a spanking. I don't want to get, like, don't put me on detention. It's not because I don't want to get in trouble. It boils down to, do I believe that God has my best interest in mind? And I do. So I said, okay, no more cigars. I'm not going to smoke any more cigars, right? So a month goes by and I'm fine. I'm about on, you know, my second pail of water, you know. This is okay. It's probably going to be good. I'm on the treadmill. Hey, I think this is better, you know. I'm doing just fine. And then about the fourth bucket, I'm like, you know, God, my birthday's coming up. And I start renegotiating with him. See, you can obey 70%. 70%. You can start to justify it. You can talk yourself out of it. And what obedience in this story looks like, and I know this is a trigger for some of you because you've been in churches or families where everybody told you what to do and you had to obey these rules and those clothes and like whatever it is. I mean, it was just constant. This is what religious stuff you have to do. Coaches, teachers, like obey. And as finally as you got 18, 19 years old, like I'm had it. No one's telling me what to do anymore. I set my own rules. So I understand it's a trigger. It can make you feel really weird. It can be odd to just obey. And about the fourth bucket, you start saying, what? And here's the great line. I think this is good enough. But they filled it to the brim. They obeyed all the way. And because of it, they get to start to participate in a miracle. They start to get some traction. They probably are taking the brunt of the whole thing. Everybody's at their tables. Hey, I ordered some wine. You know, where is it? A half hour ago, I told you to bring me a glass. I mean, they're the ones taking all the brunt. They're probably thinking, what are we supposed to do, man? We don't buy the wine. It's like they're taking, and like they're on the sidelines. Like, we wish we had some more wine, but now they're moving. If you are stuck, could it be that you're not obeying? You're before this. You're stuck there like, everybody wants wine. I don't know what to do about it, and I don't know how I'm going to get it. They're not there anymore. At least there's traction. When you start to obey, there is traction. You're going somewhere. You're not wishing for wine no more. At least you're doing something. So question number two. Am I willing to obey? ... Completely. Third, write in your notes, am I willing to take a risk? Then Jesus told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. They did so. Circle that. And this is crazy. So, because John leaves out a lot of details in this story that we don't even know what happened. And one of them is, we don't know when the water turned into wine. We don't know that, like, when they went over and got the water, maybe they were carrying it in the bucket and they're like, dang, check that out, man. And they're, you know, they're pouring it in. We don't know. Maybe it was that, you know. Or maybe it was as they were pouring it, it was going from water. I mean, that'd be like probably the way I would do. It's like, I'm going to freak them out. And you're like, they're pouring it, it's turned into wine. It's like, yeah, I told you I was God. I don't know. But I mean, we don't know. We don't even know. We just know Jesus tells them, take it to the MC, take it to the big shot, take it to your boss. We don't know when it happened. Leaves out the details. And here's the problem. When I'm able to obey completely, I'm done. I'm like, I did it completely, God. Like, didn't you hear the horn? Fourth quarter horn. I'm done now. Shower time. And Jesus doesn't want them to miss their reward. He wants them to be able to cut down the nets. He doesn't want them to miss their reward. And here's the reward. It says it in the story. Whenever it happened, maybe it happened as they were taking it over to the master. Maybe it was like this. It was like, this is water. He's crazy. Why did she tell us to do this? This is so unbelievably crazy. Like, why? I can't even believe I'm doing this, man. But okay, you said to do it. And they hand it to him, and they're like, and he's like, whoa! Good stuff! What would you have done? I knew that. I had that one. I knew it was going to be good. We have no idea, but here's what we know. The master of the ceremonies has no idea where the wine comes from, but the servants knew. And that's their reward. Jesus doesn't want them to miss the reward. Can you imagine? They would have never faced not enough the same way again. There is no reward without a risk. And Jesus knows that, and he doesn't want them to miss it. He's like, yeah, I'm going to make wine for everybody. I don't want them embarrassed. But these people right here, I want them to get a reward that they'll take the rest of their life. And every time you take the risk with God, you'll get it. For the rest of their life, whenever they didn't have enough money or patience or energy or time, they could say, wait a minute, I was totally there. I remember when not having enough can be completely changed when you get him involved. And that was their reward. So three questions today. Everybody that wants to be invited into a miracle, big, huge story, and everybody gets to. Am I willing to be told? Am I willing to obey? Am I willing to take a risk for the miracles? And here's the bottom line, and write it in your notes. Everyone needs a miracle. Like this miracle wasn't for them, but by participating in it, their reward is they understand that at some point they'll need a miracle. And they know the one that can give it to them. And here's the last part of the story. This was the first of all the miraculous signs that Jesus did. He did it in the town of Cana in Galilee. By this, he showed his divine greatness. Circle that. Man, that's it right there. By this, he showed his divine greatness, and his followers believed in him. Awesome.